church would do the mission. And I think it's really backward looking to look at, to be complacent. I'm not saying you were.
No,
but
I'm not.
If this group was complacent about the Church of England doing mission through mission agencies.
We don't want to dwell too much on the Church of England, but certainly it has been the understanding. And I mean, going back to the many of the starting of the mission agencies, of course, the first was 1698, SBCK, followed by USPG, and then you had the vast bulk of them started in the end of the end of the 18th, 19th century. What they did at the time was to do work, as you said, absolutely about the where the church was failing, and that was with women and lay people, and also as pioneers. And in the work I'm doing now, I think that the mission agencies have not got to do themselves out of a job, though the situation is very, very different, but actually to go back to their role as pioneers. And that's happening with fresh expressions and other ways. And of course, the Church of England does look different now because we have the companion links, which are the diocesan companion links, and a very tricky relationship with mission agencies of the Church of England. So it's a complex picture, that's this job, not the one that was that was last time. So no, there's no element of complacency at all. But the Church of England has done that for whatever reason in the past. And I can't, I mean, I think the only thing would be where that would change, even though we've got a Board of Mission, which you know only too well, that we haven't got a Board of Mission, we've got Mission and Public Affairs now.
Yeah.
So there is some sense of you know, the mission being at the heart of the national church institutions. But I think what's really important is the mission agency's pioneering role, and that is as necessary as ever.
Yeah. See, it works out here. Can the Federation of Theological Colleges here in Cambridge use Henry Martin Centre and give all the responsibility for mission to them?
Yeah.
It shouldn't.
Indeed. And what is the partnership? So what is the partnership going to be? To use that overused and slippery word.
I was just going to say, the LMS, the London Missionary Society, started as a missionary society 120 years ago. It became the Council for the World Mission more than 30 years ago, and that was precisely the paradigm shift that no longer do we have a mission agency doing mission on behalf of whoever, but now the council enables the churches to do mission.
Yeah.
And that's the entire, how successful we are is another question, of course, as we spoke about books, I've just published a book on post-colonial mission, with Council for World Mission being a case study on post-colonial mission.
Strongly with Roger.
No, there's a surprise.
It wasn't the institution, as it were, of the church that was the most sort of powerful engine of mission in the New Testament. It was St. Paul, who had a deeply ambivalent relationship with the church in Jerusalem. And when the church in Jerusalem tended to get really active in mission, very often was when it faced an enormous crisis and people were sort of driven out by persecution and did their own thing and then had to sort of, in the case of Samaria, sort of bring in the institutional church to sort of try and sort it out. What is the church? When we say the church does it, the church as the visible church is so often the institutional church, and actually the church is just so difficult to grasp, isn't it? Because the institutional church is only one aspect of it. And perhaps, if I were a congregationalist, even more so, one would say, not most important. So I think it it quite natural, it seems, to Christian traditions for certain people to, and particular agencies, to be the people at the cutting edge. And as you said, you know, the churches are trying to hold it all together. I mean, and that seems to me to be what happens in Acts 8, if you like, you know, and Acts 15. People go off and do it, and then you have to try and hold it together. So I don't think we need to be worried about that. And you know, if everything gets reduced to being official commissions which represent the church and are part of that institution, well, I don't think that's particularly desirable. If it happens and it works, great. But I think that history and perhaps, you know, the Spirit tends to work at the edges. One could go back into the Old Testament. You know, it's not the kings, but the wise men very often, but these prophets, and not the institutional prophets, but the, you know, so and so's who sort of come in from dressing sycamore trees, who actually are at the cutting edge of mission.
Ryan.
It seems to me there are a number of models they're dealing with, and if I could deal with the Anglican situation.
Okay, yes.
It seems to me that there are three models. The SPG model had a great deal to do with the Church of England as a whole, seeking official backing and being seen by the bishops, or at least some of them, as the way in which they were going to promote the mission of the whole Church, particularly in reference to North America.
Indeed.
So there was one model. Then you had the model arising really from the evangelical charismatic revivals of the 18th century, which felt that the first model was a bit inhibiting and too institutional. And they may have been right, of course. You may need both. And there was a third, which you haven't mentioned, and that was the religious orders.
Indeed.
And the Anglican religious orders were very largely involved in home or foreign mission. And that was another case of a missionary model where people were dedicated in a very special way. And it seems to me that all of those can be justified on biblical grounds.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we shouldn't be ashamed of any of them. I mean, there are problems with each of them. But then there always will be problems with particular models if you're limited to one or the other.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's my commentary.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And it may apply to other denominations in different ways. And it's interesting that CMS, of course, has been talking about itself as, in some sense, a religious community.
That's right.
Rather than an agent.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was thinking all along that that emphasis on mission in communities and in particular groups, not necessarily mission. Societies, but all sorts of groups who take something on, who have to have in the church, and the church has to be an untidy diversity.
Absolutely.
Of people. And I think Roger's model would repel me rather if it were the only thing on the board, as it were. It seems to me there's got to be a whole variety of initiatives and efforts, some fruit. I found it immensely exhilarating when I got into the CMS for the first time. I admit people like John Taylor were extraordinarily exciting and inspiring wherever they were. And I felt the same. I'd been in the Diocese of Winchester, no doubt, later. But
yes.
It doesn't go by institutional shape or anything. I think that the whole differentiation on those lines is too theoretical.
I just want to come back a bit, and because I agree with all that has been said, because I was not trying to say that the mission agency should not actually exist, because I can't see any chance that they will not continue to exist, including the communities, which are vitally important, I think. But they should always be trying to mobilize the church. And if they're not doing that, then there's something wrong with them. They should always be going back to mobilize the church.
Yes.
Fair enough.
I would entirely agree with that.
Yeah, your statement in the beginning that you are trying to combine two experiences, one UK and Ireland, the other one is the Dalit experience in India, when you said bring them both in the global context or something. I think is again Dalit experience is an important aspect in mission in India today, but that is not the only.
Not
thing,
at all. No.
And I think it's this work that is happening is creating certain doubts in the minds of Indian theologians that this is highly discriminatory. Because it only focuses on a group of people. The problems of those people are truly important for the churches to address, and this has been happening in history. And in Edinburgh 2010, there was a very visible omission of all those who cannot be bracketed in Dalit. I think this we find it, it's not mission. When we talk about mission, it has to be inclusive. We cannot discriminate people on the basis of community. Then how can we talk about community building? So, I don't know, I mean, you are not the right, I mean, the person, but I think this concern should be a core when you come together, that make the Indian experience a wider one, which has a Dalit focus, of course. But it should not be tied only to Dalits. And then that really, then we miss out quite a lot of other important aspects of church life in India.
Yes.
That's my first comment. The other thing is quite a few things expressed by others. What is the, you talk about theology of mission, and there is a poverty of theology of mission, and there is it's lacking in several agencies and so forth. What about the praxis of mission? What kind of issues that are focused upon in Britain and Ireland? You know, what are the areas that you see evangelism has to take place in the context in UK? And keeping Matthew 28 as the primary biblical driver will take the attention away from home. It's again go and preach the gospel all day. This we have heard in India for so many centuries. When is it going to change? Biblical driver, I think the shift has to happen so that the focus is very much on the churches in UK and Ireland. And we, living thousands of miles from, we'd like to know as to how, what are the issues that are paramount for mission today, and mission to the nations. Of course, it is not only the job of one or two continents, it is the job that everybody has to do. It is everybody. Matthew 28 is common to all. It's not just to Western Christendom which has to be dealt. So I don't find so much of shift from the overseas mission to your home mission.
A whole group of fascinating questions there. On the first one about the nature of the Indian situation, your points were raised at the Edinburgh 2010 Foundations for Mission Study Group, because there was a small group, there was a group of Indian theologians.
They were all Dalits.
Yeah, no, they weren't. I don't think so.
The people who attended 2010, those who were invited, were drawn from one particular community from
India. All of them, were they? Because certainly the group, because I went to that group because I wanted to go to something
not
complete.
Not against them.
No. But I went to that group and because I just wanted to experience something quite different and hear a whole different set of views. And I wasn't sure that they were all Dalits.
But
the point was the point.
Spokespersons.
Right. Okay. The I mean that group was led by Daniel Gerrard.
Yes.
So you know that. So there was a lot of and that your point was made that you know just to look at Dalit experience is to miss a whole load of other things about the Indian situation. But of course you recognised I wouldn't and couldn't comment on that, but that point was raised there. On the biblical drivers, I mean, in many ways, I wish that the driver of the mission in this country were not the Matthew 28 go, but actually come over and help us. The Acts, which of course is the historical driver for SPG, because I think we need an awful lot of help over here on how to do mission in our cross-cultural situation. And I think the unity that about the questions that you raised is that whether you're going from here to another country or in this country, you are in cross-cultural situations. And there is a very, very poor understanding of that amongst the churches on the ground in the UK and Ireland. I think it's growing, but you know it's not there yet. So if you talked in my suburban church where I go to every week and I'm very much part of, saying, "Oh, well, we're in a cross-cultural situation," you know they would look at you and they would think you were mad. And yet we are. And I'm talking about a highly suburban area like Surbiton in just sort of south of London. But we are in a cross-cultural situation. But the cultures are different, and they're cultures of not necessarily